Welcome to the Remnant Radio Show. We're glad you can join us for Part B of Preparation Skills for the Remnant Bride.
And, you know, some people say, well, you know, even if I couldn't plug in that old refrigerator or old freezer, let me tell you what you can do. You can bury it into the ground, and it can be a cool place for your food. And this is the way the old timers, especially up here in the mountains, when they lived off grid in these cabins, that's what they would have buried into the ground. And they would have a lip hatch. And, you know, if you could put it in your cellar, in a root cellar of sorts, then you have a place that will keep stuff cool. So there Absolutely. Are purposes for them.
Yeah.
And then I was going to say, some people turn them into smokers too, but you know.
And solar ovens. I've seen refrigerators turned into solar ovens. We strip everything out and then put a, you want to use tempered glass, like a patio glass door on the top. And you can bake multitudes of bread and things in it at a time.
Right. And when I say old, I'm talking about there are no plastic parts. Okay. You know, so, you know.
Yeah, you don't want to cook in plastic.
Especially if you're going to do a smoker with it. That's, you know, what the good old refrigerators and stuff were for. But anything that's got thick insulation like that, you could bury it into the ground and have it to be like your own little cellar for to keep your food cool. Your food
and
cool.
Safe.
Right.
From, you know, animals and stuff. And also from freezing. That's another thing that right. people that do winter camping, you use coolers in the winter to keep stuff from freezing. So it could also be used in that way.
Okay. All right. We have a few minutes and just I don't see the next person in here because I'm not sure that I don't see them in here. So let's go on and talk about the handkerchief.
Kleenex. How addicted are we to Kleenex? you know, the hanky, you know, growing up, my grandpa had a hanky and ladies had hankies and they're easy to find or they're easy to linen, you know, cut some linen and make some hankies out of it. We're not going to have an endless supply of Kleenex, and having something that you personally, each person could have their own and, or maybe two, wash one and use one. I mean, you know, nobody likes a runny, drippy nose. And it's a simple thing, and it's going to be a big difference. You know how everybody feels when you run out of Kleenex in the house.
Well, yeah, which is along that line of TP. So you can always use TP toilet paper if need be, but you know, sooner or later, depending on how long this is going to be, I doubt that you'd have to, you know, build a whole house just to store this stuff. So you do need to have something that is reusable, like a handkerchief, and linen makes great handkerchiefs. And you usually can, you know, get a piece, a remnant piece off of whatever you're doing something with.
Yeah. And I mean, simple thing to make a big difference in something we're really used to having is, you know, something to wipe our nose on. So. Yeah.
And softer the linen, you know, lightweight linen, not the real rough stuff would probably be the better choice.
Yeah. Not upholstery linen.
Yes. All right. What about hats?
A hat is it, well, two different kinds. There's the kind to keep your head warm and the kind to keep the sun off you. And both are recommended. A lot of ladies that wear head coverings, you know, you'll have something to keep your head up and keep your scalp protected from the sun and stuff. And it will keep your head warmer. A lot of body heat is lost through your head. So definitely you want to have, if you have cold climates or with this weather and this things that are happening, you never know what's going to become a cold climate. You should have a winter hat absolutely in your car at all times. And it's at least in all the winter months and in your bug out bags. And they're easy on at the end of winter. They put them on clearance. You can get them for $1.90. It's just throw them. They're small, you know, have one for everyone in the family and ones to keep the sun off. There's some flexible ones. There's a brother that recommended the Tilly hat and it's supposed to be really nice. And I don't have all the information on it, but his looked really cute. It was, looked kind of like a fisher hat, a fisherman's hat or a safari hat and, very nice fabric and lightweight and, easy to roll up and pack. And you could do a straw hat, but that would be bulky.
Yeah. Yeah. So you got the cloth hats. And, you know, to be honest with you, until I lived in the Northwest, I mean, I did as a child, but I don't, you know, we just wore three or four layers anyway. But, you know, it wasn't until as an adult that I moved back here that and as you get older, because I don't think a lot of younger people really notice this, but definitely after you get probably 40-ish, you really do notice that you lose a lot of heat without having a hat. or socks on. And even at nighttime, that is just really crucial to keep from maybe getting hypothermia or getting too cold and not being able to regulate back to where your body needs to be.
Yeah. I mean, head heat loss is, I think, one of the greatest places where people do lose heat. So really important to have a hat.
And, you know, I'm going to say this too. I mean, I can't verify this. I haven't been able to verify it. I'm sure I can. I just got to figure out where the sources are. But one of the things that what I've seen when I've done the research on linen and tallits, you know, the prayer shawl, that actually that was a real, very useful, daily used outer garment. And so it wasn't just a fancy prayer shawl just to pray under. It was actually a real tool. And that tool was, it would cover them at night to cover them and keep them warm. It would keep the sand hopefully out of their face during a sandstorm. I mean, it was a very, very useful tool. I believe that's why in the Renewed Testament, the Renewed Covenant, when it talks about, you know, if you take your brother's cloak or, you know, I think it probably would be his outer garment, his tallit or covering, you would want to give it back to him at night because, you know, people didn't have several changes of clothes and it was a very useful tool for him. And so in that respect, it was a hat. It could have been a hat, you know, a covering for the head.
That's beautiful, isn't it? And Torah tells you that if you have them, you had to give them back. If you took them as a pledge or whatever, you had to give them back. So that they would have their covering.
You know, I mean, if you only have one set of clothes and you know, and it can be very warm, very hot during the day and cool at night in the desert. So you would definitely, you know, want to have whatever the one set of clothing, inner and outer garments, back. And we just don't, you know, really have a comprehension of what it was and how they lived, I think, in our society. So those are things to keep in mind.
That'd have been close. I mean, clothing in this country is ridiculous, you know, as far as the amount and the I mean, not that it's not good that we have a lot available, but yeah, people don't have a concept of, even our ancestors not that long ago had just a few changes of clothes or Sunday best and, you know, every day, you know, a set of working clothes.
All
should
right.
be Saturday best.
Yeah, Shabbat best.
Shabbat right. best.
Yes. Shabbat best. Your Shabbat best set apart. Yes, that would be great. All right. You have down here a hatchet.
A basic tool. We didn't touch on that, but yeah. Something to cut down a tree other than a big saw. But it depends on how big the tree is and your skill and your physical fitness. But a basic tool again, and there's the kind that you can do, you know, a belt, hang on your belt, and just a reasonable one and good to have maybe in your car as well.
All right. Honey.
The only food that never spoils. Isn't that beautiful? Abba knew what he was doing when he said Israel was the land of milk and honey. If it's properly, you know, harvested and if it crystallizes, it's not spoiled. You just heat it up if that bothers you. They say, I've read some articles that most of the honey that you find in any grocery store is not really honey. If it's processed to the point where there are there's no evidence of any pollen left, it is not considered real honey. And the stuff coming out of China and things is probably not even from bees. You know, I mean, we don't know what we're getting. So you really want to get your honey from a beekeeper, you know, or the local health food store. And raw is best. Sometimes I like it filtered because I'm not sure about the whole little bee parts in my honey. Is that kosher or not kosher? But honey is, I mean, it's good for so many things. It's wound care. It's a food source.
Another good reason to have raw local honey is if it has the local flora, then it kind of acts like homeopathy in that it can help relieve your allergies. And so many people do that. Also, if you contaminate your honey by putting a spoon in there after you put something in there, it's not that the honey would go bad, but whatever you put back into that honey and that's sitting there mixed or, you know, water, whatever you might have put in there. So that's something else to consider.
Yeah. And that's the allergy treatment. We've recommended that to people many a times that you get the local honey.
And know your source, because I was told last year that they are finding that some of the so-called raw local honeys, not necessarily local, but you know, people who think they're going to a health food store and getting raw honey or really good honey, that it's being adulterated with high fructose corn syrup. So that's another reason to know your local honey farmer and find out what they have in them.
Mm, isn't it terrible that you can't get things truth in labeling? I thought we had that in America.
No, and a matter of fact, we got notice this week that aspartame or NutraSweet, that the dairy farmers are trying to get that put into milk without having to be labeled because somehow they think it may be good for us. Ugh. So again, another reason why we really need to look at the source and what is going on.
It's terrible. It's just ridiculous.
I know. Every day I'm just like, oh, Father, you have to come soon. It's just
lest great. Those days be short and no flesh would be saved.
You know, I'm all for letting him blast me to smithereens just to keep from whatever has to happen anymore. I'm just so over how terrible things are getting.
I know it's incredible. You just can't imagine it. You go, what more? And then you go, nope, don't let me ask that. Because it's something new every day.
Yeah. So I'm sorry. So before we left you, when you left us on air, because Skype keeps coming in and out, you were saying more about the honey and the raw honey?
Yeah, to get honey. And I said, I didn't know if unfiltered was kosher or not. If it's got the little bee parts in it, is that kosher?
Well, I've never seen bee parts in them.
Well, if it's unfiltered, sometimes it has floaty looking stuff in it. And I'm assuming it, you know, it's usually brown. And I'm assuming it's maybe little bee parts.
Well, you sure it's not part of the beeswax?
Could be. I just, you know, it's one of those thoughts that runs through my head. But I know when they were eating honey out of the wild, they would have just been eating honey out of the wild, however it came out of the hive.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right. Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. I see what you're saying. Yes. Okay. And, you know, and again, it wouldn't hurt to get just a minor little review on honey. But, you know, I'm very fortunate that I can go right up to the honey producers and, you know, get the honey and get on their list so that I make sure that I get it. It's less expensive than getting it from the health food stores. And I buy, you know, 5 to 8 gallons a year because I use it predominantly. I don't use sugar very often. And when I go to can, if I can can, I always use honey instead of sugar. So it's a little more expensive, you know, but we don't really have any doctor bills either. So, and this year, what's really interesting is just today we went out and there are bees everywhere in our yard. And that's a good thing because they haven't been around for a while. So we don't know why they're here this year in such an abundance, but we're very glad. And again, the Wi-Fi towers and things like that and things in your home like that and what they're spraying and different things like that can really affect the bee population, which affects our food and our growing seasons, you know, the flowering and reproduction of our plants. So
yeah. What is the percentage of the plant life that requires pollination? I forget. It's huge. It's like 3/4 or something like that. I mean, 75% something.
Well, some of your fruit trees won't do anything, you know, without it.
Yeah. I mean, we don't realize. I don't know. Maybe they do realize, but it's really crazy when you think about the bee population and what we're doing with the chemicals and the pesticides and the fact that we really are dependent on them for sustaining human life and all animal and plant life.
Mm, that's terrible. Yes. All right. So anything else about honey? I mean, there's medicinal things that you can do with it. I don't use it too much for medicinal. I know that you can use it on wounds.
Burns,
and if I didn't have oils, yeah, I would do the same thing. Okay. All right. And we've talked a little bit about this hydrogen peroxide.
Yeah, we did. We did.
It keeps coming back around this list.
You know, we did talk about this. It's there's medicinal, which you're more familiar with, the pharmaceutical grade. But it is used for cleaning, for medicinal uses as a mouth rinse. It's very inexpensive. I've used it successfully to ward off and treat MRSA. That with a combination of the Gentle Healer oil, I'm able to keep the MRSA away. And it's fairly safe. It you know, it does burn a little bit, but as far as, you know, chemicals and things go, and easy to find.
Right, usually.
So far.
Yeah. And again, we talked about the food grade in a previous show. And so, you know, that is one of those items that is not very expensive. And, you know, I I almost pick one every month or two when I go to the store, especially Walmart. They usually have the best price on them, and I don't go to Walmart very often. So that is a good item. That and rubbing alcohol. You know, it may come in very, very valuable for cleaning, not just for medicinal purpose, but for cleaning. You can brush your teeth with it. You can clean up. You know, what if you had to, you know, butcher your own animals? It's excellent to get blood out of your clothes and stains. So
it's awesome something for that.
Yeah. So it's something really to consider. And, you know, it's not going to hurt to have a couple of bottles of hydrogen peroxide, especially if you have a need for it. Then you never really seem to have enough.
Yeah. I don't know if you can make it at home. I've never looked into that or know the chemistry of it or anything. It might be something crazy. But that would be certainly something that maybe to look into and see if it is reasonable or possible. Okay. Might not be.
Yeah, maybe someone can write in and tell us. That would be great. You know, to back up just here for a minute, we did have someone write in and tell me that depending on your location now, you know, where I live in the Northwest, wood is a major fuel for heating in the winter. We have a sister in Virginia where the tree trimmers, they can't get rid of the wood. You know what I mean? It costs them money to haul it off to the dump or to burn it or wherever they have to take it to incinerate it. So,
well, that sounds like a tragedy for me. We heat with wood.
So can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. So what she's doing is she's going to their location, loading up the wood and taking it back and splitting it and getting it ready for the winter to sell. And I just think, you know, that's awesome that she, in her case, because wood's not really really needed or wanted as much, she can take advantage of that. Whereas here, you know, we have to go pay for a permit and go get the wood, bring it in. And of course, the tree trimmer guys already have those permits, so they have permission to get the wood.
Yeah, it's in some areas I know that they have, I think California's come down pretty heavy on wood burning, even fireplaces. I've heard some counties, you know, they're starting to ban it. And now they've talked about, yeah, forbid, banning some of the wood stoves because the ones that don't have the catalyst in them. Now, hopefully they'll be at least, if they get to that point, grandfathered in. You know, for
well,
those who have
let
them.
Me tell you, if it's like here, the whole county's not like that, but within 10 miles of the city, the county seat here, they went through a phasing process and they did make everyone switch out and confiscate, basically. I mean, you know, people, but they want the old stove. They want to make sure nobody can survive without the new catalytic converter. And the problem with that is besides control, they say it's because of air quality. Never noticed the difference myself between the two different times we had them and didn't. But I certainly burn much more wood and it's not as hot. It does not keep the house as warm. Now, the good side of it is I don't have to get up in the middle of the night and change and add wood because you can stoke that baby down and, you know, you don't have to load it as often, but it doesn't keep the house as warm either. So, you know, it's got its pluses and minuses.
Yeah, ours has a catalyst and they're very expensive if you have to replace them and they're not convenient to get into and they have to be cleaned. And, you know, there are some disadvantages to it. And, you know, if that comes, I mean, it seems crazy that it's incredible to me that they can have people force people to actually pay because wood stoves are not cheap. I mean, you can get, I've seen sometimes $99 for like the Ben Franklin Potbelly stove. I'm not saying you can't get a simple one for, you know, a reasonable amount of money for a small space, but for one that's going to heat a house, you know, it's a couple thousand dollars. And
absolutely.
I think to force people to actually repay, you know, rebuy something. And then ones with the catalysts are more money, you know, and ours has to have electricity to run the fan. We're not supposed to ever run it without the fan running because it can damage the motor and the catalyst. But obviously in a survival situation, we would not worry about that. But, you know, that's a downside too. If you just have a radiant wood stove, you don't have electricity.
Well, you know, to me, this is kind of, I'm seeing a parallel in the thought process here that it's kind of like registering the guns. If you, you know, which everybody did, they crossed over to the catalytic stoves, wood burning stoves. But the problem is now that everybody's crossed over, now, you know, they want to come in and give us announcements, even though we've done this, give us announcements of days when we should not burn our wood stoves. Because it's like their ultimate goal is to make sure that we are totally on grid. So, you know, to me, it's like the guns. Register your guns, then we know who's got them, then we can come take them all. You know, it's like we know you've changed your stoves, but we're going to tell you still when you can and can't burn them. So.
Yeah, and then the insurance companies know, you know, we're in the process of buying a new house. Praise Yah. It's been a long time coming, and we're trying to get out of the suburbs, and we're almost at the home stretch. And the insurance company, you know, wants to know lots and lots of details of what is in the house and what's on the house. And the wood stove is absolutely part of it. And we have to be honest, and we can't, you know, afford to not have the proper insurance. That the insurance companies also have all that information on things in your house and improvements and things that you do. And certainly, especially with fireplaces and wood stoves, because the insurance changes with that.
Right.
Yeah. So it's they get the information one way or another. And like you said, it's control and knowledge, their knowledge of what we have.
Yes. And, you know, here, not having a wood stove and having the power grid go down would kill many people. You know, it's not like we're in Florida trying to save money on the winter. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't even make sense. And of course, in Florida, that's really interesting because, you know, they used to build the higher ceiling homes so that the heat would go to the top. And then, you know, if they did have electricity, they would have the fan. And I've lived overseas in Puerto Rico and Guam. And, you know, even if they're not high ceilings, they're low with concrete, with louvers so that you're getting breezes and stuff. And so our construction totally changes with the weather and, you know, what kind of soil you're building on. So your houses change, but they have changed over the years, not just because of what is required for your geographic location, but because everyone's so dependent on the grid or the system or something, you know. And so then we find ourselves with, you know, electric screwdrivers and houses where you can't live through whatever your extreme season is going to be and survive.
Right. I mean, yeah, the new, you know, cookie cutter, you know, subdivision type homes, you know, giant rooms, often with gas fireplaces or electric fake fireplaces, and like the high ceilings. You know, some of the older homes had somewhat high ceilings, like you said, but the new ones, you know, they put those, you know, you got a 14, 20 foot ceiling in there. And if you have one small source of heat, if you could manage it, what good is it going to do you? You know, it's a lot of things that people just haven't really, you know, that's not the mindset for most people, when they're buying a house. And it's certainly something to consider that you have a smaller, space and a smaller, you know, especially in cold climate, the height is going to make a difference in heating.
All right. So now hygiene, how about a mikvah?
Definitely important. Yes. Mikvah. I like to say, yes, people are clean. I'm kind of a clean nut myself. Although you wouldn't know it right now because we're in the process of packing, but, it's something to think about. I don't, you know, it's amazing to me, and we get messy house. I'm not saying we don't, but some basic rules. I don't know how many people have, probably many, you've been out to a restaurant or something or to a public space, you know, a store, and someone uses the restroom and walks right out the stall and right out the door back to the grocery store, you know? It's a basic hygiene. Wash your hands after you use the bathroom. We're not in a third world country where you don't have running water and hot water and soap and towels or blow dry your hands dry. It's not only that you're not taking care of yourself by that poor hygiene, but you're not loving your neighbor. It's really, to me, and maybe because I'm a little bit more fussy about that kind of stuff, but nobody really wants to have your bathroom germs or your sick germs or your cold germs in their food or on their stuff or, you know, shake hands with them or whatever. And some people just don't think about that. Like, it's not really a big deal. And in a survival situation, if you have poor hygiene habits going in, and I realize that, you know, resources of water and things like that are going to be limited. But if you don't have at least some basic kind of, you know, sense of staying clean and keeping your hands, you know, when you handle things that are dirty and contaminated, you could be a real danger to the community and to yourself. And I guess I'm really strong on that. And Abba gave us very good instructions for staying clean and being clean. And I don't think that he wanted slobby, messy people, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Alrighty. May your garments always be white and let your head lack no shimmer. Shalom.
Shalom.
She bends her heart to your way in prayer. When she hears